Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us on the line Dr. Yazbek. And Dr. Yazbek's a retired pediatrician, and we're going to be talking about autism, at least one of the causes of autism. There are several causes of autism, probably a congenital tendency related to the MMR vaccine and then related to the mercury, but we're going to be talking primarily with Dr. Yazbek about what is known about the relationship between autism and MMR vaccinations, measles, mumps, and rubella. Dr. Yazbek, thank you so much for being with us. Dr. Yazbek, are you there? Well, Dr. Yazbek, are you there? Well, we're going to have to get hold of our engineer. I wonder if Dr. Yazbek on the line or not. Dr. Yazbek? Well, I guess we'll just have to get the engineer out here, find out. Maybe we lost Dr. Yazbek. Maybe we're going to have to call him back again. Under any circumstances, I'm going to disconnect the line here. And Dr. Yazbek? Well, then we're going to have to call him back again. I'm going to get my producer to call our guest back again and see if he can get our producer out here, our engineer, so we can find out what happened to Dr. Yazbek. Under many circumstances, we're going to be talking about the incredible explosion of the incidence of autism. You know, 30 years ago, perhaps 1 in 10,000 children was born with this condition, where the child's mind just seems to be short-circuited, and they can't think and can't think effectively. And then, of course, as time went by, we began hearing more and more stories from children and from parents that the child was perfectly normal until they were 2 or 3 years of age, and then they took their vaccine shots, and right immediately after that, they came down with autism, and they began to decline. They lost their ability to speak. They lost their ability to concentrate. They lost their ability to communicate. So, I mean, this was indeed is a frightening, frightening situation for parents. And, of course, most pediatricians and most doctors, somewhat fearful for the fact that perhaps they'll be blamed for what had happened, tended to assure the parents that there was absolutely no relationship between the vaccinations and the onset of autism. But there were some physicians, some pediatricians, who began to look into the background of these, and one of them was a Dr. Wakefield. And he was an English gastroenterologist, and many of these children, after they had had their vaccinations and the onset of autism, developed steady and persistent diarrhea. Well, let's see if we've got Dr. Yazbek, are you there? I'm going to ask our producer to get our engineer out here to find out why we can't get Dr. Yazbek.
Hi.
Oh, Dr. Yazbek, are you there? Dr. Yazbek? Well, Dr. Yazbek, are you there? Well, we heard him say something, but let's see if we can get our engineer and find out.
Hello?
Hello, yes, can you hear me? Dr. Yazbek, can you hear me? Well, hopefully we'll have him here. We've been having nothing but engineering problems all day long, so I don't know what the problem is there, but hopefully we're going to get that taken care of. Dr. Yazbek, if you can hear me, why, please hang on and be patient. We'll be back in just a moment. All right, this is Dr. Stan here, and hopefully we'll be able to get our very, very special guest on the line here in just a moment, because we seem to have some sort of a short circuit under any circumstances. We're going to be talking about... Dr. Yazbek, can you hear me?
Hello?
Hello, can you hear me? Anyway, just please be patient. We seem to be having all sorts of problems with getting our guest on the line. I'm not quite certain why we can't communicate with him under any circumstances. Dr. Yazbek is a pediatrician, and he's done a great deal of work on the relationship between measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine and the skyrocketing incidence of autism. There was a Dr. Wakefield, who was a very, very well-known gastroenterologist over in Great Britain. And when the parents would come to him complaining of the problems with their children, not only the autistic symptoms, mental, but the persistent diarrhea, he began to actually colonoscope the children, and he found that they had an inflamed intestine. They had a lot of lymph nodes there, and when he biopsied the mucosal membrane of the colon and the area, why, he found the incidence of a measles vaccine, but not just any measles vaccine, but the measles vaccine you get when you take the MMR vaccine. And so he began, of course, to say that there was a definite relationship between the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine and the onset of autism. Well, of course, when you do that sort of thing, why, you run into the whole medical establishment has built its reputation on what a wonderful job we're doing with vaccinating people. How dare anyone suggest that this is not beneficial? And the great tragedy was that Dr. Wakefield came under tremendous pressure, and there was no question at all that his information was valid, that the information he was putting out was good, but unfortunately, why, he lost his position. In other words, he was eventually actually forced to leave Great Britain, and he eventually came to the United States. So there were a number of controversies that were being put out, you know, over whether this was accurate or not. Of course, there were those people within the medical community who said this is ridiculous. How could you possibly suggest that vaccinations would be harmful to people? And then there were the people who would listen to Dr. Wakefield, who'd read his publications and said, look, maybe this is what's really going on, and maybe we can help these children by changing their diet, because, of course, if you have a leaky intestine, why, children are unable to filter out certain toxins and certain things, glutens that are in milk and in meat, can actually then get into the cross into the body and get into the brain and create all sorts of problems. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Dr. Yazbek, can you hear me
Good
at the present?
Yes, Dr. Stan, how are you?
I'm doing fine. Well, we've had all sorts of technical difficulties this last hour, but hopefully things are on the mend now.
That's
anyway,
wonderful.
I've been introduced you to our audience, but for those of you who do not know who Dr. Yazbek is, why don't you go ahead and tell them your background and how you got interested in this subject of autism?
Well, I'm a pediatrician, and I trained in infectious diseases in the late 50s in probably the premier infectious disease hospital in New England, and then spent some time at Brown University in doing some child development, and then decided to practice and practiced for 34 years in Northern Rhode Island. I was also a school physician during all these years, and I have always been interested in vaccines and vaccine, and was a big user of vaccines. I administered all my own vaccines. I was always very much pro-vaccination, and then our family was hit with a real disaster. Our daughter, when she came to get married, was found to have almost absent titers of rubella, although I had vaccinated her personally and had given her her booster personally. And we checked, and we had to give her an MMR booster, and then that still didn't bring up her titer. And again, we did not know enough about this at the time. We know much more now, and we give her a second MMR. Her first child, who is our oldest grandson, was born about 5 years later, and he was doing fine. He was absolutely perfect. We have pictures, we have photos. My wife is a pediatric nurse practitioner. I'm an old pediatrician, and we looked at this beautiful baby, and we saw him grow, and suddenly in the middle of the second year of life, about 3 or 4 months after his MMR vaccine, we could see him that he had disappeared from in front of us, and we, with time, he kind of improved, and then he received his booster, and then he really crashed then to a much deeper regression from which he has not recovered yet. We have investigated him at the Royal Free Hospital, where Dr. Wayfield had done his original research. He has the typical findings in his gut of autistic enterocolitis, and we have now evidence that he has also measles virus genomic RNA in his gut wall. So we have connected the points together, and this picture that we talk about, which is when you expose someone to a challenge and then you wait and he de-challenges, he gets better after the first MMR and then got hit by the second MMR, is kind of invariably accepted both by the IOM and by courts, actually, as causation. In other words, if you take a certain medication and it causes some reaction and you stop it and the reaction goes away and then you take it again and it causes it again, it's almost certain that it is the medication. Based on those findings, based on the findings of the measles genomic RNA in his gut, I feel strongly that, like, a small proportion, we're not saying that every child who gets an MMR gets autism, obviously not, but certainly 5 to 10% of people seem to say that, who have children with autism, seem to say that just after the child got his triple vaccine, for some reason that we don't know, some genetic predisposition in those children, some autoimmune predisposition in the family, like my daughter not being able to make titers, predisposes them to come down with autism. And that's, again, in a very small number of people. And and something has to be done, because this small number ends up by being a larger number when you keep on looking at the number of cases of autism that are in this in these United States. One in 166 now, as of last year.
And one out of every 166 children in this country is autistic. Now, there are many other children that will have other manifestations, such as ADD and ADHD and mental, difficulty reading or mathematics. All sorts of neurodevelopmental abnormalities. And there probably are several different causes of this, but there seems to be a very definite group that you can definitely tie this to the MMR vaccine, because the child is doing well, they get their vaccine, and suddenly they begin to retrogress. And of course, there are others that are probably related to mercury, but there is a specific subset, and these children have persistent diarrhea associated with the change in brain function. So, could you explain why this is, and then, of course, what can be done to help? Because there are things that have certainly helped some of the children who have this autistic enterocolitis, and the two go together.
Well, if the child indeed crashes after his MMR vaccination, then it's always worthwhile to investigate him, and there are easy ways to investigate, simply just to, for example, to get a urine test for urinary polypeptide. And if that child has large amounts of casein morphine and glidomorphine, in other words, if he is touching big molecules, morphine-like molecules based on milk and wheat, and these are actual poisons. I mean, they're really morphine-like substances. Because he has a leaky gut, that will pass into his blood, and then from his blood to his blood-brain barrier to the brain, and affect the active centers, which at the age of 18 months are obviously speech and behavior and socialization. This is the easy way, but obviously the better way is way to do it is to look at the gut itself. If indeed there's this huge constipation followed by this huge diarrhea, it's well worth it to look at the ileum and then to identify the features of the hypertrophic ileal hyperplasia and also if possible to get a viral culture and for identification by DNA.
And I think what's so important to explain this whole clinical entity, because I think a lot of our listeners out there don't have a medical background, is the fact that ordinarily there are certain things that just aren't absorbed into the system. But if you have what is referred to as a leaky gut, in other words, if you have an inflamed colon, you'll begin absorbing certain parts of wheat and milk into the system, and then these pass on into the brain where they are toxic. Ordinarily, the gut protects the brain from getting these things. But when you alter the absorption of the intestine, then, of course, you allow these things to get into the brain where they're terribly, terribly damaging, and it's felt that this is what's responsible for autism. And, of course, I've talked to a number of people who have treated autistic children by restricting their access to wheat and milk and certain other things, and many of these children have actually improved. Have you had that experience?
Brilliantly. I mean, in our own grandson. But I want to tell you that even before we discovered this, we knew that with children with celiac, when you take them off wheat and you have them on a strict diet, if for some reason they get something that's contaminated with wheat, they have behavioral changes that are very apparent. And these are normal children. These are not damaged children. Now, remember that the gut, and I think everybody listening should know that the gut, after the brain, the gut has more nerves than any other organ in your body. And if that is affected, and we believe that somehow those children have some a lack of ability to detoxify toxins, including mercury, for example. And if they receive their vaccines in the first year of life and they cannot detoxify them, they are like sitting ducks for the triple vaccine to come and for the measles component to lodge into the intestine, increasing this permeability. Now, what we do, actually, when we remove, when we put them on a very, very strict, and I mean very strict, in our house, for example, we have two toasters, one for the children, one for us. That's how strict it has to be. And when you put them on the diet, indeed, after a few days, 3 or 4 days, they go into withdrawal. They shake and they scream and they're in terrible shape emotionally because you have taken away this. And then they settle down and they start talking. I mean, this has happened case after case after case. The children who first, when they are affected, they first stop acquiring new speech. Then they lose it completely. They lose what they had acquired and they lose their social skills that they had acquired prior to the injection. And then, when you put them on the diet, those skills seem to return. They start to talk again. And it's really a wonderful thing when a child that hasn't talked for 6 or 8 or 10 months says, Papa or Ma or Gimme or I want it. It's just every word. I have people who actually write to me and say, we got 2 words this month. We improved by 6 words. It's just every word seems to mean so much to the parents who suddenly see this child who was totally normal with no video evidence, photograph evidence, and suddenly he disappears right in front of them. And then a little word means so much to them.
Well, I think what's really so disheartening is the fact that there has been an organized propaganda campaign through Time magazine and through television and through radio and through so many of the newspaper articles to say, well, if a child is autistic, don't try to do anything. I can remember those recent articles in the New York Times saying, why try to change me? I like it the way I am. Now, don't try to of course, by the time you're 30 years old, there's not much you can do. But if you can get to these children very young and change their diet, and if there is a question of mercury, of course, you attack that. But there's a great deal that can be done for these. And the units are a number of people who specialize in the treatment of autism. And, of course, so much that can be done, and yet, of course, that is being withheld from the American people. I think that's unconscionable. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, Zoltar, absolutely that, and I think the evidence to that is that, as you know, in prior years, let's say in the 60s and 70s, autism was described in 42. So before 1942, we did not know what autism was, and Kanner in 1942 described 11 kids, and very good description. Actually described some gut findings in many of them, interestingly enough, before we even know it. Very well described. And then, until about the 70s, most of these children were affected since birth. And we used to call them, if you remember, infantile autism or early onset autism. And they never really advanced, and they were very retarded.
Hold that thought here. We're going to be back in just a moment or two to continue our discussion. And, of course, we'll welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295.
A very important book is called AIDS, The Unnecessary Epidemic. Actually, it's a book I wrote back in 1991 that tells you the story of the politics of the AIDS epidemic and the fact that doctors have been blocked at every turn from doing what was really necessary to stop the spread of this horrible plague, both in the United States and throughout the world. AIDS, The Unnecessary Epidemic, it gives you my story of my effort working with an organized medicine, the fact that the doctors of the state of California consistently voted and supported an effective public health policy, and at every turn their efforts were frustrated by those working with an organized medicine, both at the state and national level, and the tragedy is that people are dying in America today unnecessarily. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for AIDS, The Unnecessary Epidemic, because you need to understand the background of this epidemic to understand what is really happening medically in America today.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. In the 1970s, there was a group of Italian immigrants in the small town of Rosetto, Pennsylvania, who drew worldwide attention for their unusual cardiovascular health, despite their pasta diets. I recently uncovered the fact that their unusual health was attributed to the precious red wine which they imported from Italy. Today we know this as the French paradox, the fact that the French exhibit greater cardiovascular health despite their fatty diet because of the red wine they drink. Wouldn't it be great to enjoy the health benefits of red wine without the calories, alcohol, and sulfite preservatives? Well, now you can with Longevinex, the world's first stabilized red wine molecules preserved in an airtight capsule just like in a sealed bottle of red wine, equivalent to 5 glasses of the best red wine. Call 866-405-4000 to order Longevinex for healthy aging without the calories and alcohol. 866-405-4000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done. Get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap. It's a miracle.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Dr. Yazbek. And Dr. Yazbek, do you have a website there or a way of people can get in touch?
No, I don't. But most of my stuff can easily be found through Google, and have a lot also published on Red Flags, www.redflagsdaily.com.
All right.
As a matter of fact, right now on the homepage is my latest piece on the famous Japanese study, MMR, Japanese MMR studies that was just released a week ago.
Well, let's get into that, because, of course, the vaccinologists, the vaccine establishment, and certainly the manufacturers, cannot let the American people or the people throughout the world really know what's happening. We know that when they started the MMR in Great Britain, about 10 years after they started it here, then their rate of autism began going up as well. So they concocted a study in Denmark, and, of course, it was financed, of all places, people by the Centers for Disease Control. And didn't they have people from the CDC over there working to make sure the results came out right?
Well, I mean...
Or was that in the Japanese study?
No, in the Danish study, obviously, it is the one that made so much noise for the longest time. And they certainly had... There was a protocol, and one of the CDC investigators worked with them. But obviously they followed the protocol, and they swear that what they did was totally kosher and was perfectly fine. And I have no doubt, I don't doubt that this is so, except that we found very quickly that when the study was published, that there was a problem with the calculations of Dr. Madsen. So that within a week from its publication, the professor of epidemiology at McGill, Dr. Sammy Swissa, wrote to the New England Medical Journal and said, you know, there is a problem with this calculation, and here is my calculation. This shows that when you compare, Madsen actually compared children who were vaccinated with children who were not vaccinated and said there is no difference. In other words, the children who were not vaccinated had an equal number of cases of autism. And Dr. Swissa said, no, this is not so. There is definitely a difference between the two, and there was more autism among the vaccinated children. We came years later. You know, this was published in 2002, and we only picked it up in 2004 when someone sent me those numbers at last, and I looked at them. They didn't make any sense, and I had passed them by Dr. Goldman, who knew much more than I did in statistics, and he didn't think that they were right either. And then when we put one and one together, we found that indeed what nobody had said before ever is that the incidence of autism increased in Denmark after the introduction of the MMR vaccine, except that it wasn't so apparent in that MMR study that Madsen wrote, because the vaccine was introduced in 87, and it took about 4 or 5 years for 80 to 90% of the children who received the vaccine, in other words, real saturation by the MMR. And then it took 4 or 5 years for them to make the diagnosis. They make the diagnosis at the age of 5 on average in Denmark. I.e., for the first few years, there were not enough children who had the MMR. And for the last 4 years, there were not, even those who had the MMR, in 80, 90% of children had the MMR, they were not old enough to be diagnosed. It was a very suitable period for him to examine. And now we looked that if we went 2 years later, the lines went up like dramatically, like they did in England and in California, like you just described.
In other words, basically, they only used part of the statistics to come up with a conclusion that you don't think is valid.
Well, not only that, but 9 months later, Dr. Stan, 9 months later, the author himself, Madsen himself, wrote a second paper. This one was in pediatrics. And in that paper, he wanted to prove this time that the thimerosal, that mercury, did not cause autism. So what did he say? He said that after Denmark stopped the thimerosal in 1991, autism increased. And in that paper, he clearly demonstrated that autism increased dramatically. And then he got to the conclusion that, you see, autism has increased after we stopped the thimerosal, therefore it is not the thimerosal. Again, this is the same person 9 months later or 10 months later. And the story is that epidemiological studies cannot prove that a connection does not exist. You can, regardless of how big is your study and how good is your study, you cannot prove that MMR does not cause autism. You can prove that things cause something, but you cannot prove that something does not cause something.
Much like
this Japanese study, the authors came right out just this week and said, and this is the quote, the direct quote is, epidemiological data, however, cannot test the very different hypothesis that MMR might involve increased risk of autism in a very small number of children who, for some reasons, are unusually susceptible.
Hold that thought.
The Anglo-American establishment gives you the documentation for Professor Quigley's allegation that there was a secret society created in England that ultimately came to dominate England and ultimately came to dominate the United States of America. The Anglo-American establishment will give you the books that you can read, written by men who were actually involved in the original secret society. Professor Quigley opens his book saying that most people have heard of the Rhodes Scholarships, and most people, a few people, have actually heard that Cecil Rhodes wrote a confession of faith, which was attached to his first five wills, talking about the formation of a secret society. But what almost no one in America realizes today is that that secret society was actually formed and still exists to this very day. The Anglo-American Establishment by Professor Quigley, Bill Clinton's mentor, is one of the most important books you'll ever read, and available by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR.
Sophisticated investors are buying gold and silver today because the dollar has lost almost 50% of its value in relationship to the euro, and the price of gold and silver has increased almost 40%. If you're interested in learning more about precious metal investing, why don't you call Bo at 831-423-0177. That's 831-423-0177, or visit him at Elliott's Stamp and Coin Shop in downtown Santa Cruz at 141 South River Street in the San Lorenzo office building, which is located between Trader Joe's and the Signature Twin Movie Theater. Bo's telephone number is 831-423-0177. That's 831-423-0177. And he's located at 141 South River Street in the San Lorenzo office building. And if you mention you heard about Elliott's Stamp and Coin Shop on Radio Liberty, why, you'll get a 15% discount on some non-investment items. Are you prepared for a chemical, biological, or nuclear attack on America? Are you prepared for a major natural disaster? Well, how would you feed your family if the grocery stores were empty and you couldn't get supplies? The United States is at war today, and millions of people throughout the world would love to see this country destroyed, so you should prepare for an attack. Let me suggest you contact Ready Made Resources at 800-627-3809. That's 800-627-3809, and purchase a catalog. They have a 2-week supply of Alpine Air freeze-dried food. That's 3 meals a day for 2 people for 14 days for only $298. And if you mention you heard about the offer here on Radio Liberty, you'll get a 10% discount, which means that every meal costs a little over $3. So call 800-627-3809. The 150-page catalog costs $5, but you get your money back if you purchase a product, so why not give them a call right now? Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Dr. Yazbek, who's a pediatrician. He's retired now, but he is dedicated to getting the truth out about the cause of autism, the relationship between autism and MMR vaccine, the relationship between, and of course, he doesn't cover the relationship between doesn't specifically deal with the relationship to thimerosal. There are other people who have investigated that as well. But the one thing we do know is that there's a skyrocketing incidence of autism, that many of these children will get much, much better if properly treated. And, of course, everything is being done to discourage parents from seeking treatment. Why would you do something like that? Well, let's get back to Dr. Yazbek. Our telephone number here, if you'd like to call him, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And let's get to the Japanese study, because this is a fairly recent study. One more of these studies that they put out in an effort to assure the public, oh, there's nothing to worry about. Why, we would never do anything that would be harmful to you, because we're from the government. We're from the Centers for Disease Control and the FDA and, of course, the NIH. And of course, we would never tell you anything that wasn't true. And, of course, we know that isn't true. And we've talked in the past about Dr. David Graham's testimony before the Senate last September. Mostly is suppressed by the media. You may recall it, but wasn't mentioned day after day after day after day, like certain things that when they're trying to focus our attention. And what Dr. David Graham pointed out, speaking of Vioxx, which is a different subject, but that the FDA knew about the studies that were done before Vioxx was ever released. It was called the 090 study, and it showed a 700% increase in the incidence of heart disease with Vioxx. And so what did they do? What did the FDA do to protect the American people? Why, they released Vioxx without any warning at all. And according to Dr. David Graham, somewhere between 89 and 139,000 people have had heart attacks or strokes unnecessarily. Other people think the figure may be up over 160,000. And what happened to Dr. Graham when he told the truth? Why, he lost his job, he was criticized, he was isolated, not allowed to publish papers or give talks. That's what happens when you tell the truth about Vioxx. That's what happens when you tell the truth about the disease that's afflicting so many children in our country today. And we're seeing a skyrocketing increase, especially here in California, where this is very, very closely monitored. Well, Dr. Yazbek, what about this Japanese study that's come out recently?
Sure, well, the Japanese study, as I said, I quoted the fellow, that they themselves said that they couldn't find, they couldn't really make sure that their study showed that a small number of patients, of children, were afflicted with autism because of an MMR vaccination. Now, the problem with the Japanese study is the following. First is that one of the authors is a British author who testified and was one of the experts when that question of MMR was taken in England and discussed, and actually that committee then decided, or the legal aid was discontinued because of all the negative pressure that said that, you know, MMR does not cause autism. Why are we still talking about MMR causing autism? And if MMR does not cause autism, then discontinue the legal aid to the poor parents who were suing for restitution, and in fact completely crashed the any possibility for the parents to get any compensation for the children's involvement. Even if we had proved it, if you don't have the funds to go through with your litigation, they stop. So here's the fellow who writes this article. Now, I looked at the two authors, with the two Japanese authors. They wrote three papers together, and one of them was in January of 2005. They never wrote a paper with this fellow. I reviewed 200 studies with the main author's name, although they were in different subjects, and out of the 200, I only found three that had non-Japanese names or non-Oriental names.
Now, why would the Japanese write a paper with somebody from Great Britain?
Well, exactly. And why would they go and talk about what is happening in Japan and what happened in 1991 and 1992 and so on, and then right at the very end mention that, well, you know, this proves that you cannot stop the use of MMR vaccination in the United Kingdom and the United States. I mean, total jump from Japan to the United States to the United Kingdom.
And so basically they had an agenda. They wouldn't have mentioned the United States and Great Britain if they didn't have an agenda.
Well, I mean, it right off the bat, I mean, it's really so strange that they go through this. And then there was no question of, no mention of funding. There was no mention of conflict of interest anywhere. But, you know, when you read the study, all of these things jump in your face. The last paragraph, by the way, just to, is finally in terms, I mean, this is after talking about Japan for six pages. The last three lines read, finally, in terms of immunization policy in countries such as the USA and the UK, where the MMR vaccine is still being administered, our findings indicate that simply terminating MMR vaccination programs would not lead to a reduction in the incidence of ASD.
How could they conclude that if they said that they weren't able to say with certainty that at least some children were predisposed to it?
Well, and indeed, their argument, they had a They had a good twist. Actually, it was a smart idea what they did. They said, well, you know, we'll show you that when we stop. You see, Japan stopped the MMR vaccination in 1992. So they said, well, look, there's this tremendous increase in 1993, and therefore it must be due to the fact that it cannot be due to MMR vaccine because we stopped it. But what happened is a multitude of factors came into play. First is that while they were giving the MMR vaccine was never very popular. So from 1988 to 1992, in the last 10 years, from 1987 to 1992, there was very little use of MMR. But during those years, there was still an increasing rate of autism. It obviously really shot up afterwards. But then when you look at what happened to other vaccinations, you will know, it's easy to notice that, number one, the Japanese encephalitis vaccine, which we don't have here, and which contains thimerosal, its use went up from 45% to 90% that year, where the autism increased straight up. And then, to replace the MMR vaccine, they recommended that you give the measles, mumps, and rubella separate vaccines at monthly intervals. Although Dr. Wakefield has said that to be safe, you have to be given at yearly intervals. But they said at monthly intervals. But then they also said that you could give them on the same day. So many of the children could have had one or two. And by the way, the uptake of measles and rubella vaccine specifically went up from 65% to 99% in that year. I mean, those lines, when you look at the graph that's at the bottom of my study, that graph is straight from the Japanese health department. It shows that the lines of vaccination went right up in the year where the vaccination went, where the autism went up. But if it was, if it had been indeed the MMR factor, I mean, how can you say that the autism increased after MMR was stopped and therefore does not cause autism without enumerating every single factor? Not only that, they had the biggest classification in diagnostic criteria, the IC-10, the biggest one ever done in that year. So now there's another confounder. I mean, when you go down the line, and I think the article is available on Red Flags, and I think it's people should see the multiple factors that are listed that showed that, sure, there has been an increase, but the increase was due to many other factors. It was not simply due to not or having stopped the MMR, because if you stop the MMR and then you give measles, mumps, and rubella in three different syringes in the same day, you're accomplishing the same thing. And if you're giving also some thimerosal added to that, you're accomplishing the same thing. So there, we know, it's an interesting concept, but it really didn't hold water. And now the same with, you know, we'll go back that, you know, since 1998, when Wakefield wrote his paper, there were several articles, multiple articles, and each one of them was, they said, drugs are doing now, this is the best ever, it's the best, it's the strongest, it's the most convincing. Then comes Madsen in 2002, and in his second paragraph he says, no studies, I mean, just like that, a blanket statement, no studies have had sufficient statistical power to detect an association, and none has a population-based cohort design. So he shot down two studies that were paid by the British, that had employees from the health department, British health department, among the authors, two studies from Finland that were financed by Merck, of all people, a study by another fellow who was a paid consultant for Avanti's Pasteur, and a study from California where the author worked for the California Health Department.
Well, I think that you have to be very suspicious of anything that is financed by the drug companies or by the vaccine manufacturers, because they expect to get their money's worth.
And then Madsen himself, this is a study sponsored by the CDC, he said all of those studies could not have found a relationship. Therefore, so why did we say they were good? And every one of those studies, Dr. Stan, every one of those studies was pumped up. At the time it came out, it was said to be the best thing. It was the fifth gospel. I mean, they were just, it was fantastic. Everyone was better than the other. And everyone didn't hold water after 2 or 3 years. And you don't hear about them now. No one hears about those studies anymore. They're gone. And obviously, since we wrote our article in the Journal of American Physicians and Surgeons and criticized the Madsen study, and that we wrote our article in September 1, 2004. It was published. We haven't heard from Dr. Madsen to rebut us. So until now, we haven't heard anyone to tell us that what we said was not right, that Dr. Switzer in McGill was wrong, that Dr. Stott and Dr. Wakefield, who criticized it and wrote a commentary on the same issue, were wrong. No one came out to tell us the Madsen study is right and you are wrong. Until now, 6 months. So, and as you see, the Madsen study now is not mentioned at all. It's totally, totally obscured by this new Japanese study that is so weak. I mean, there's no question that the Madsen study was better done than this, but this study here is so weak. And I presume that we will destroy it in about 2 to 3 weeks.
All right,
and I bet you that we're going to have another bigger and more expensive study financed by somebody else to tell us by epidemiology that MMR does not cause autism. And we'll shoot it down also.
Well, I think that people need to understand that the Centers for Disease Control is part of the problem. I mean, they were responsible for stopping the AIDS epidemic in America, and 500,000 Americans have died. They did everything they could to block the implementation of standard and effective public health approaches to stop this epidemic during the first 15 years of the epidemic. Well, let's go to, if they would allow 500,000 people to die in America and another million to get infected in a totally unnecessary epidemic, can we trust them on other issues? And I would like to suggest that you really can't. And of course, they keep insisting there is no such thing as chronic fatigue syndrome, and yet we have over 800,000 people with chronic fatigue, which merges into chronic fibromyalgia, almost 2 million Americans with that combined entity, and the CDC says it just doesn't exist. Let's go to Steve in Louisiana. Hi, Steve. How are you doing?
Pretty good. Listen, did you say that his information was at www.redflag.com?
Redflagsdaily.com.
Redflagdaily.com.
Daily.com.
Right. Redflagdaily.
I don't know if
Red Flags Daily, plural.
Redflagsdaily, okay.
.com. Yes, okay. I don't know if this is your department. Has anybody tried the infrared sauna on them kids to help get that mercury out of them?
Yes, they have. Dr. Yazbek, I don't know if Dr. Yazbek wants to comment on that, but I will tell you that, yes, this has been done by people who are dealing with the mercury aspect of it. Do you know anything at all about that, Dr. Yazbek?
I don't. I'm sorry, no. I don't know much about the therapy. I mean, I have enough with what... the mess I'm in with the MMR, but there are multiple therapies. There are some excellent articles on mercury and what to do with it, and I'm sure that I think you have had some speakers talk about
yes.
it, and I'm sure I can propose some better qualified people to talk about it than myself.
Yes, we've had Dr. Grimlin on several times,
sure.
Steve, and certainly we're going to have some other speakers. In fact, I think we're going to have a speaker this next week who has two children with autism, and he's been at this for 13 or 14 years. So we'll be doing more studies on this, and yes, this has certainly been used. Anything else?
Thank you both for your work.
God bless.
Thank you, sir. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you.
The story, Dr. Stan, is the following, that not only are we losing the child, not only have we lost a generation, a whole generation, but we have lost the parents. 85% of those parents divorce. Their life is totally overtaken by this horrible disease. It's just the grandparents who, instead of enjoying their retirement, going on cruises, going on trips, looking at nature, are babysitting, are cooking, are doing gluten-free foods, are helping financially, are supporting morally, are writing letters, are picketing. The disease does not only ruin the child. The cost is outrageous. I mean, you cannot imagine what we have spent to get the child, to get our guy to get this ABA therapy in when it is just outrageously expensive. And so it is not the question that you know, this is you know, some kind of a little thing. This really demolishes the child and demolishes the family. And what do we do next? I mean, and look at the cost for the community. I mean, when you look at it, when the government introduced IDEA, they said that they would be responsible for 40% of the cost. The federal government has never paid more than 15% of the cost for special ed. The states pay in different amounts, and it ends up on the community. The community has to educate those children and pay the most on the, and if the communities, the small towns, the small cities pay 40 to 45% of the cost.
And what a terrible tragedy for the parent, for the community, but mostly for the child. And of course, what's so unconscionable is this organized, coordinated effort to tell parents, there's nothing you could do. Well, I can tell you there is a great deal you can do, but the earlier you get started, the better. Don't wait till they're 3 or 4 years of age. It may be too late, but you can start this early, and there have been some dramatic improvements. Dr. Yazbek, thank you so very much for being with us. Again, that's Red Flags Daily.com. God bless you. Thanks so much.
Daily.com. Thank you, sir. Bye-bye. Thank you, Dr. Stan. Good night, everybody.
Now, most people laugh at the idea that there is or has been secret societies. I wanted to tell you about a tape we have. It's a talk I gave before the Concerned Women of America some years ago, and it basically goes back into the background behind the secret society, which was formed in England and eventually came to America and came to be known as the Council on Foreign Relations. It goes into the background of Cecil Rhodes. And how does that secret society that he created impact on you today? If you read the works of Professor Carol Quigley, who was Bill Clinton's mentor, you understand that Professor Quigley is probably one of the leading experts today on history, but also a man who had the courage to speak out. You need to get the four-tape set, The Secret Government, to understand what Professor Quigley taught Bill Clinton. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is under attack today.
Leading-edge dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high-quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly we have a four-tape set on mercury, which I think is really very, very important. We have a video on mercury, and of course, if you read Dr. Blaylock's book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, he has a section there on mercury, and he goes into the background of autism. And probably there are three causes of autism. First of all, there is a congenital type, about 1 in 10,000. But between the mercury, the thimerosal that they put in the vaccines that they knew would damage the brains of our children, and this was well known for a long period of time, and then, of course, using the triple vaccine, measles, mumps, and rubella, and there are some a great deal of evidence to suggest that this produces autism as well. There are multifaceted causes and multifaceted treatments, but there's a great deal that can be done for these children. And if you go back and you read those articles, and certainly in Time magazine and the others, you'll find they're saying, don't do anything at all. Just leave the child alone. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. And, of course, how do we understand what's going on today? How can we understand the total callous unconcern about the health of children? Who would want to hurt a child? why there are lots of people who like to hurt children. And you need to get, of course, Bertrand Russell's book. It's out of print now, but you find it quoted in my November newsletter. We're on page 50 of his book, The Impact of Science on Society. Bertrand Russell talks about how the use of diet and injections can be used to mold the minds of our children to where the society wants them. And then he goes on to talk about how selective breeding, we can create two classes, one the ruling class, and then, of course, the plebs, I think that was the term he used for them, almost two different races. And, of course, the idea that the plebs would ever revolt against the control of the elite, like Bertrand Russell, of course, would be like sheep revolting against the eating of mutton. So I think that you have to understand, that's page 51 of his book, you have to understand this elite concept that it permeates so much of the certain groups within our society today, like the Council on Foreign Relations and other similar groups, where you have an elite group who look down upon the common people. You see, they believe that they have been chosen to lead the world. And, of course, we don't believe that way. I don't. I believe that every individual is a unique individual made in the image and likeness of God. And he should have the right to determine his own destiny, not have it formed by him, by the ruling elite. If you don't believe that there are secret societies out there that are controlling what's going on, you need to get our 4-tape set on the secret government, which is the interview with Professor Quigley, where he talks about the Council on Foreign Relations and the elite group he was associated with. And in fact, in his book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, he talks about having the opportunity to go through their secret records. And then we have a 4-tape set on secret societies. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, there are secret societies in America. And then if you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. And you can get the book or the video or the audio tape, or you can get all three of them together for $29.95, or get them separately, whatever you'd like. But understand that there are organizations, not one, but many organizations out there, but they all have a common goal, a common desire, and that is to create a one world government and a new world religion, because they are all based on the intent upon destruction, the traditional Christian faith. And there's an intense hatred of Christianity and, of course, of Jews out there in America today. People are totally unaware of that, but it is well organized. And all you need to do is see so much of what comes out of Hollywood today. See the vicious attack on Mel Gibson and his film, you know, on the Passion of the Christ, and understand it was purposely and intensely generated because of the hatred of Christianity. We even have a video. It's called the put up by Carol Matriciana, and I think it's called The Gods of Hollywood, in which she actually interviews somebody, a producer in Hollywood, who talks about the major function in Hollywood, the purpose of Hollywood, is not to, it's called The Gods of Entertainment, is not to actually make money, but to destroy Christianity. And so when you understand that, you can understand so much of what's going on today. And the fact that the dark forces have infiltrated the entertainment industry, they've infiltrated our government and our foundations and our media, but they've also infiltrated our churches. You need, of course, to see the videos we have entitled, They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version. That's They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. You need to get our video or DVD on Megiddo. Megiddo 1, which is 2.25 hours. Megiddo 2, which is 3 hours. Very professionally done. And, of course, aimed at Christians to educate you about the information you're not going to get from other sources, about the history of the secret societies, the secret satanic societies, about prophecy. That, of course, is Megiddo 1, and takes you into the prophecies for the Old Testament, the false prophets of today, Nostradamus and Edgar Cayce and others, and then World War I, World War II, and World War III that we're engaged in. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Remember our number, 1-800-544-8927. Until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.